Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We've got Robert Crane.
In 3, 2, 1.
He's a Microsoft MVP, a Microsoft
certified trainer,
an Office 365
specialist, blogger, podcaster, social media enthusiast, and one-of-a-kind speaker who has a gift for explaining tech to the average person so they can understand it.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
There's also myself, Mark Keane. All right, let's move on. I'm the voiceover guy, producer of this podcast, blogger, speaker,
an Azure
architect,
and Microsoft
MVP who specializes in helping people with a journey to Microsoft Azure. You are listening to the
Need to Know podcast.
It's your source for the very latest in Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations all about Azure and Office 365.
Hi, I'm Lars Clint, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. We're now at episode 150, and welcome along, Mark Keane.
Yeah, 150, we made it. What a nice, even, rounded number. Thanks, Rob. How are you going?
Not too bad. We have a special edition this time. We have some support from Exclaimer, and we also have one of their employees on to speak with.
My name's Brad Shepherd. I'm a senior product specialist at Exclaimer.
Brad Shepherd, how'd you manage to get Brad on?
We sent a couple of emails, we did a bit of begging, and they agreed to come on. They've also agreed to provide some sponsorship for this episode, so we thank them for doing that. And again, we recommend everybody go and have a look at Exclaimer, the best in email signatures for on-prem and Office 365, and we'll put links to all that detail in our show notes.
So that's coming up very, very soon in this episode.
Very, very soon, once we get through all the news and basically what's been happening in our little world. So Mark, what's been happening with you?
With me, I have been busy. I've been contacted by numerous people. In fact, Rob, I'll just quickly mention this too. Ever since I put MVP on my LinkedIn profile, don't know about you, but I've been contacted by employment agents probably once a week, either by phone call, email, or through LinkedIn. It's really ramped up. But in saying that, I had a phone call the other week from one of the agents, and he called me up and said, "Oh, by the way, I'm running a user group. And we need somebody to talk." And I said, "Well, I can talk about Azure. That's what I do." And he said, "Yep, cool. I'm happy with that." So I went in and spoke about Azure. And this is a little bit of a grab from it that was on Twitter.
"That's me, Azure MVP. I've only been an MVP for the last 12 months. So I'm also a podcaster. So I do a podcast called the Need to Know Podcast. I'll bring it up on the next slide, but definitely, like, if you've got an iPhone or whatever else, do a search for it, Need to Know Podcast. I do it with another MVP called Robert Crane, who's a Office 365 MVP, and we cover pretty much the whole entire Microsoft cloud stack. And we kick it off with, like, Azure News, the current news. We do a weekly podcast. It goes for about 45 minutes. It's not like Windows Weekly where it goes for, like, hours on end. But we cover all the latest news. We're sponsored by Rode, so we've got a microphone. We go around to different events. I was at Experts Live last week. There's a presentation down there, and I spoke to a whole bunch of people. And we record all these people and the content. We stick it on the podcast. So check it out. I'm also a blogger, as I said before. So it's there's the URL down there, markkeane.com. I'm on Twitter.
We had a massive turnout, Rob. There was quite a number of people there. There's about 100 or over 100 people that registered. 30% to 40% dropout rate, which is to be expected. Plus, it was raining on that night too. So it was an impressive crowd that was there. And you know what? As far as user groups go, the numbers were, like, impressive. And I was just thinking, like, these employment agents, not only are they trying to get you into do jobs and things, but they're also doing these user groups now. There's another guy that I know who's another employment consultant, and he's doing his user group as well. And I think it's a new turn for the better, I think, because previously ourselves were trying to do user groups and get numbers of people in. But you know what? These employment agents are doing it instead because they've got the contacts, they've got the numbers. And for them to organize people to come, it's not that sort of tricky because it's just send an email out to the database of people, but they need content and we need to present. And so for our MVP, so it's good for us, it's good for them. So I can see some sort of a synergy happening in the future. I think it's a good little turnout.
Well, they're obviously doing it for their own benefit to get people, and what we're seeing is a shift away from pure technical to the DevOps, where you're getting people who normally work day-to-day in the office are getting into IT more and more. So, again, we expect to see it. But again, if it gets more bums on seats and gets the opportunity to get technology in front of people, I think it's a good thing. So, good to see that you've done it, and I think we'll see more of it, as you mentioned. Now, I suppose the other question I've got for you, have you installed the Creators Update from Microsoft yet?
Yes, for Windows 10. It came through 2 nights ago, in fact. It took a while to install, and it's up and running, so yeah.
Any issues? Mine, I put it on most of my machines here. I found it pretty straightforward, pretty easy, no dramas at all, and a few nice little improvements.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad. In fact, I knew there was going to be a lot of improvements with the display aspect, because with the Surface Pros it's got very high DPI and everything's set to 200% scaling. But then it's interesting when you work with different applications that don't necessarily support that high DPI scaling and it comes across on the screen a little bit funky and different, like add-ins for Excel and things like that, or 32-bit applications that don't fully support it. But I've noticed now there's a whole bunch of changes that have come through and it's still not 100%, but they have changed it, and they're probably going to work on it with future updates and so forth. But yeah, no, it's all good.
Certainly recommend it to everybody. It seems to work pretty well and should be rolling out to people as we speak. Now, we have a few leftover interviews, short interviews from the MVP Connection event. Do we want to get into those now, Mark?
Yeah, sure.
I'm joined here at the MVP event by Greg Sheridan. Greg, what is the most exciting thing you've seen from Microsoft in the past 12 months?
Hey, Rob. For me, I think it's the live translation and transcription that they're doing in Skype Consumer and also currently in preview in the Skype Meeting Broadcast feature, Meeting Broadcast service. Just the fact that you can deliver a presentation in one language and have it instantly translated and transcribed into, I think, something like 30 or 40 different languages. That's pretty amazing.
Okay, and any ideas on what may be coming that would excite you in the next 12 months? Any thoughts there?
Oh, no. Look, my my magic ball's got flat batteries. It's not predicting too well what's coming up. There's just so much potential out there, but anything could happen. Just sit down and watch this space.
Stay tuned, basically. So finally, how can people get in contact with you or find out more information about who you are and what you do?
So hit the blog up at greginsydney.com. You can spell it a couple of ways, but they should all find me. Otherwise on Twitter at greginsydney with Greg spelled G-R-E-I-G.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Greg. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thanks, Rob.
Got to also thank Rode as well, again, for their sponsorship and providing us the Rode mic, the S1 mic, and the Rode News Shooter kit to give us. And we used that quite nicely at the event, didn't we? The MVP community event, Rob.
The other thing we probably need to also thank and apologise for is the fact that we are using Zencastr again after a minor hiccup in the last episode, so it is not gone away. The website is still currently up and we are using it, so we thank Zencastr for providing us that great technology as well.
And you did two more at the Community Connection event. It happened a couple of weeks ago. Here's the second one.
I'm here with Leon Tribe at an MVP event, and I thought I'd ask Leon a quick question. In your opinion, Leon, in the last 12 months, what's the most exciting thing that Microsoft has created?
Well, I work with what used to be called Dynamics CRM. Probably the biggest exciting thing that's happened there is the bringing in of CRM into the Dynamics 365 platform. So now there isn't really a product such as CRM anymore. It's part of a much bigger ecosystem which incorporates the Dynamics CRM product with all the ERP products. And so it's now one large platform. And along with that, they provided all the integration tools. They brought in what's called the Common Data Services. They brought in tools like Logic Apps and Flow, as well as tools for creating applications such as Power Apps. So there's this whole ecosystem that's now part of what was once a CRM platform. It's a much bigger play now. That's really exciting for us in that game, just because it gives us so much more opportunity to provide good solutions for clients.
Okay, excellent. Now, what about the next 12 months? What do you see that's coming down the track that you're really excited about or you reckon will make a really big impact in the market?
For the area I work in, the thing which I'm really keen to see what they're going to do with is with LinkedIn. Microsoft acquired LinkedIn, but they've been quite quiet about what they're going to do with that. Now, this is basically a massive database of companies, their employees, and various information about those employees, depending on how much information they've given to LinkedIn. From a customer relationship management perspective, that stuff is gold. So what I'm really excited to see is how that information is going to be interplaying with the Dynamics 365 platform.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks very much for those quick comments there. How can people get in contact with you or catch up or follow what you're doing if they want some more information about the Dynamics product?
If you Google my name, you'll probably get most of my links. My Twitter handle is at LeonTribe. Otherwise, you can email me at leon.tribe@gmail.com.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much for that, Leon. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Geez, Rob, you are massively busy. We've got one more here.
So there, why don't we play it so we can hear what people have to say?
Me with Martin Catherall at the MVP event. And I have a question for you, Martin. What's the most exciting thing Microsoft's done in the last 12 months?
Oh, well, I think the answer there is really twofold. Mainly, I like the stuff that's coming to Power BI. The fact that Power BI like attracts people that are non-technical, people from accounting, marketing, that sort of thing. You could just slice and dice the data and make sense of it pretty quickly. On top of that, the release cadence, the fact that it's coming out with new technology every month, and that's flowing through to other things like SQL Server Management Studio, also SQL Server Data Tools. And I think that's really good seeing Microsoft take on board that feedback and put it into their next release cycle quickly to get feedback from our users on the spot.
Excellent. All right. Well, what about the next 12 months? Is there anything that you're excited about coming from Microsoft in the next 12 months?
Yeah, well, some of the things that I'm interested in seeing is Cortana Analytics, and especially some of the AI stuff that's coming along, speech to text and machine learning and that sort of thing. The sort of new technology and the data platform, that's it's really encouraging.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks for that. How can people follow you and follow the stuff that you do and keep up with you on the social?
Okay, well, I blog at martincastrell.com. Don't really get a lot of followers there. I pick most of my followers up from SQL Server Central.com. I'm on Twitter at MartyCastrell, so see you there.
Excellent, thanks for that, Martin.
Okay, that's it. Now, I've got a bit of Azure news to quickly run through as quickly as possible.
All right, so let me do some 365 news since you did kick it off last time. So let me get that out of the way and then you can blast along. So the first bit of news is that Microsoft have recently announced on a user voice post that they're going to enable external access and federation for Microsoft Teams. So that means that you'll be able to invite third parties outside your Office 365 organization to come and collaborate with you inside a Microsoft Teams, share the emails, share the chat, share the document. So Microsoft have committed to doing this by the June timeframe. So again, that's very, very quick, shows you the cadence that the Teams is on. It'll be really good to see. I think it'll make it a really killer app for Teams and move it along. And I think that, you know, that external access will make a big difference. So look out for that in the June timeframe. Another thing that has been a little while coming has been the ability finally to edit posts in Yammer. Yay! So what we can do now in Yammer is you can go back to any post, even a post that was been a number of years old. You can go in there, you can edit the post, update it and change it. So that is now rolling out. You'll see a little edit button available in your Yammer feed. So you can go in there and update and change any post that you have made in your Yammer environment. Yeah, before it had to be a copy and paste. So interesting that Microsoft have changed that. I think that's been one of the major requests when it comes to Yammer. So finally caught up to some of the other social media, but there are some, like I said, you can go back and basically edit any previous post. Like some people like LinkedIn, for example, you can modify your post for, say, an hour or whatever, and then it's locked in. But it was seen with Yammer, you can go back to any post that you've created, no matter how old it is, and edit that. So that's another big advantage that Microsoft has brought to Yammer. The final piece that I have is that the SharePoint homepage in Office 365 now supports the roll-up of news from team sites. So if you go to SharePoint icon in Office 365, you'll see a list of all your SharePoint team sites. At the top of this page will appear now a list of news items, from activity and news inside your team site. So it gives you basically a summary page of all the news items in your SharePoint team site. It's really handy, so that makes it the place to go for navigating firstly to your team sites, your shared files, but also to get news across all your sub-team sites. I think that's a really good option, and again, focusing more on the collaboration side of it. So, all right, that's me. What about yourself, Mark? What have we got in Azure?
All right, I've got about a minute to cover off Azure. All right, let me give it my best shot. Change in the new Azure portal. That's right. So the new Azure portal now, Microsoft are allowing users to activate, you know, the Azure hybrid use benefit directly from the portal instead of manually tagging your VMs via PowerShell. Now, with a hybrid use benefit, you can save 40% on virtual machine running costs if you bring your own Windows Server licensing, such as Software Assurance. Now, on the subject of tagging, Azure Site Recovery is something that helps you make the journey to the cloud much, much easier. And with this, you can migrate any servers, including AWS, VMware, Hyper-V, or physical servers to Azure. You can already configure Azure Site Recovery to use a hybrid use benefit to save you the 40% with PowerShell. However, now the tagging option will be available in the Azure portal itself. On the subject of moving to Azure, a new tool to help businesses move to Azure, the free cloud migration assessment helps you discover servers across your IT environment, analyze hardware configuration, and provides detailed reports, including the estimated cost benefits of moving to Microsoft Azure. Also, Azure B2B, the collaboration thing, is now generally available and is part of Microsoft's Enterprise Mobility Plus Security EMS plan. And the difference between that and B2C, Azure B2B is a set of capabilities in Azure AD that enables secure collaboration between business-to-business partners. These new capabilities make it easy for organizations to create advanced trust relationships between Azure AD tenants so they can easily share business applications across companies without the hassle of managing additional directories or the overhead of managing partner identities. Azure B2B can be used across all the plans for Azure AD, free, basic, premium, etc., etc. Here we go, Rob. 6 million organizations already use Azure AD. Mind-blowing. Millions of users from thousands of businesses are already using Azure AD B2B collaboration capabilities available through public preview. Now, in comparison, Azure AD B2C is a one that basically integrates with consumers. So it makes it easy to build your applications and then get people to sign in using accounts from, say, Facebook, Google, or Microsoft accounts, for example. And so they make that really, really super, super easy. They support all the open standards with Azure AD B2C, including OAuth, OpenID Connect for authentication, and OData for management via the Graph API. Works beautifully across all devices, iOS, Android, Windows, etc., etc. It's available on a pay-as-you-go basis. Your first 50,000 customer identities are free, and then you obviously pay for stuff on top of that. We'll put links in the show notes to the differences between Azure AD B2C and Azure AD B2B. Now, if we scroll down, we've got the public preview of Instance Metadata Service. So this is in Azure. What it is, the Instance Metadata Service is available in West Central US region at the moment only. It is a RESTful endpoint that allows virtual machine instances to get information regarding its compute network and upcoming maintenance events. The endpoint is available at a IP address which doesn't change, and then it can be accessed from only within the VM itself. The data from the Instance Metadata Service can help you with cluster setup, replica placement, supportability, telemetry, and other cluster bootstrap or runtime needs. And the service is available to all Azure Resource Manager created VMs currently in West Central US region, and they'll be adding more regions soon. It's available across both platforms, Windows and Linux. And the last piece of news I've got here, which is, in my opinion, probably one of the most useful, is the new Azure Architecture Center. And so this new Azure Architecture Center, we'll put a link in the show notes as well. It has basically all reference architectures for Azure, a set of recommended architectures for across every type of scenario. Each architecture includes best practices, prescriptive steps, and deployable solutions. You can also deploy example solutions as well right from the site using JSON template deployment. It's pretty cool. Cloud also, cloud design patterns for developers and solutions architects. Each patent describes a problem, a pattern that addresses a problem, and an example that is based on Azure. Also, two best practices for Azure cloud applications, covering aspects such as autoscale, caching, data partitioning, API design, and much, much more. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. It also comes too with a rich set of beautiful and pretty Visio diagrams and stencils as well, which you can use for all your Azure architectures as well.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we've covered a lot of stuff there. We want to make sure that we leave plenty of time for our guest, who, again, we thank very much from Exclaimer to come on board and to sponsor this episode and also to speak to us about email signatures in Office 365. So, Mark, why don't we get right into that interview now? Here we are. Welcome along to another deep dive from the Need to Know podcast. I'm with Brad Shepherd from Exclaimer. Brad, welcome.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Brad. So, oh yeah, there's Mark in the background. Hi,
Don't
Mark. How are you?
Me. I'm good. Thank you.
Well, that's good to hear. So, Brad is from a company called Exclaimer, who focus on doing signatures into Exchange products, including my favorite, Office 365. So, why don't we get Brad to just introduce himself and firstly give us an idea and the listeners who he is and what he does there at Exclaimer.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Brad Shepherd. I'm a senior product specialist, whatever that means, at Exclaimer. And really what we do is we add email signatures, a little bit of branding, the contact details underneath people's emails automatically, provide an easy way to do that effectively.
Okay, so you've come from a background with Exclaimer where you typically did the on-prem side, you work with Exchange, mm-hmm. So you've been around for quite a while doing this
Long time.
Sort of solution, yeah.
Yeah, so basically back in, I want to say it would have been 2000, a company approached Exclaimer when really they were like a software development agency, and they said, can you give us a way to automatically add a little legal disclaimer to our emails? And Exclaimer looked around and there wasn't actually an off-the-shelf application that did that, so they made something themselves, gave it to that customer, and well, I mean, the legend as it goes is that they really forgot about it. They were like, great, there you go, that's your solution, on to the next client. But more and more people wanted it, additional people asked for it, and they were like, maybe this is something that we can package up as actually a dedicated product, and they did. So it's, yeah, that's really kind of 16 years on. We're doing it for Exchange on-prem, 365, all kinds of stuff.
So can you give us an idea of how many nodes or how many people, you know, that are using your product to add, obviously, the signature to an email?
So, I mean, counting it all up, if we look at, you know, all the various customers and add up all the users within each kind of customer company, they've worked it out as 50 million people around the world, including customers on, like, you know, from Exchange 2003, Exchange 2016, Exchange Online. They've worked it out as about 50 million people around the world. So we've been going for a long time. We kind of know what we're doing. But a lot of people's initial reaction is email signatures. How is that a business? So I appreciate there may be some kind of skepticism, if you will, if you're like, well, what do you do that has 50 million people interested?
I suppose that's, again, the sort of the next question I was going to lead into. You're doing something which seems, you know, obviously people can add their own signature to the emails already. You have some basic inbuilt tools. I mean, obviously 50 million people and growing can't be wrong. Sort of what's the value add that you provide that isn't out there in the market even today?
Yeah, the idea is, so yes, you can do your own signature in Outlook, but you're just making it for yourself. If you have, let's say you've got even like 50 people in your company, or you have like 5,000, you could actually do a design, decide on how you want that little signature to look, and it's going to be correct across the board, across any device people send from, Mac, Windows, you know, iOS device, Android, anything. Signature is always correct. It always looks right. It's exactly the way you designed it. So that's really where the value is, controlling it across a whole company. If that
okay,
makes sense.
Yep, that definitely makes sense there. Mark, have you got any questions?
Yes, I do have some questions. So that's interesting how you said, Brad, before WOW, how Exclaimers started, what, 16 years ago. They were asked to do that one little solution for that customer to put a Exclaimer in down the bottom. Now, I got asked a question. What were you guys doing before that?
I think that Exclaimer, as I understand it, they were really, they were a kind of a general consultancy, you know, hardware, software. If, you know, an SMB needed it, Exclaimer would provide it. And sometimes they would do a bespoke application, as I understand it. You know, obviously this is kind of, you know, employees go, oh yeah, like I remember back in the day, and it's kind of handed on from kind of employee generation to generation. But yeah, and basically a customer asked for this solution to add a little legal disclaimer to emails automatically. And so that's really where it grew from.
Like a systems integrator originally, and then doing a bit of everything, and then turned into this, and basically more of a specialist sort of a field is what you're doing now.
Yeah, exactly. And the original founders, their background was in, you know, consultancy, in reselling software. So they would, a lot of their kind of focus is, what is a sysadmin going to like to hear? What are they going to be happy with? And resellers too, what's going to interest them? What's going to kind of, you know, get their blood pumping? If I'm not maybe kind of overstating it when we're talking about email signatures, but you get me.
It could be also the marketing department too, because it's more so marketing who push out the request to say, all right, this is what I want the email signature to look like. We've already all of a sudden popped up on the Forbes list of top 100 companies or something, and that's a big thing to push out. So that so they want that little Forbes logo down the bottom of their signatures and things. Can I quickly just jump on to another round of questions really quick? Is that all right, Rob?
Yeah, sure.
I want to talk about just quickly your signatures and stuff. And now I've just been writing some stuff down. So when you're talking to Rob about the value add with your product with email, see, because I understand, because Rob's the Office 365 guy and I'm the Azure guy, right? But I come from an Exchange background, and I do sort of have an understanding of what Exclaimer is. We've actually looked at the product originally, and so because I do have an understanding of Exchange, I'm just writing this down here. So I've got Outlook, the client itself, and obviously, yes, it works on that. But I think the value add, and I stand to be corrected, but OWA, Outlook web app, and also devices. Now, do you guys put your Exchange, because OWA is limited when it comes to email signatures. They have improved somewhat, but you can't put like custom images in there and things like that. And also too, not only that, like devices, iOS and Android, they're also limited as well, what signatures you can put on. So does that mean Exclaimer will work right across the board on every single device?
Yeah, that's exactly the idea. So whether it's the Exchange on-premise product or the Exchange online product, the idea is, you know, it's adding a signature within the mail flow. So obviously any device you're using, the email is going to go through Exchange on-prem or Exchange online. So we can cover all devices at the same level.
You know? Okay, and when that happens, now I've noticed that some people, you can tell they use that, because when you get the email from those people, it comes up with a flag at the top saying clicks have been blocked. Like obviously that's been tacked on by some other service, and Outlook's seen that as a security threat and thinking, uh-oh, I'm going to block this email because it's like a threat. Although the other side of that coin is other people that do have those emails that can just tacked on, it's done properly and there is no threat. So obviously you guys have probably done your homework and made it so it is nice and secure, so that it does look legit, yeah?
No, that's exactly the point. And because you can do that design once, you know, you're making that HTML, that specific signature, just specifically, you know, on your particular template, and everybody's getting that, it's not like you're relying on each particular employee to get it right. You're going to get the formatting right once across the board. Everybody sends that correct signature. It's not like you're going, oh no, like Mary in accounts tried to make her own and she added this image that violates best practice, and now it's, you know, adding to the spam confidence level and all that. It just, you know, it's kind of a one, a fire and forget, as people say.
you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so when people are using it for the user perspective, so marketing's happy, the business owners are happy because they get what they want. They know everybody's like pulling the line. It's all policy driven, all that sort of stuff. Companies tick, 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 tick. The user itself, when they go and send the email, do they actually see the signature in the actual body of the email when they're sending? Because don't forget, you've got all the different devices like iOS, and I'm using Outlook on my iPhone, or I could be using the native email client on my iPhone. But I'm guessing that there's probably, you can't really see the email as you're typing, can't really see the signature as you're typing the email. But is it tacked on after it's sent, or is it tacked on at the time of writing?
Well, it depends. So we have products that work with Exchange and Exchange Online that I mentioned. With those, you're not going to see the signature while you're typing, but those are actually a lot more popular because, like you were saying, they work with all devices. And the other part of that is because people can't see the signature while they're typing,
they can't
mess with it. Exactly. Cool. So, but we do have Outlook products that could deploy the signature directly into Outlook. But that's the thing, is that you introduce that opportunity for someone to go, like with my job title, where it's product specialist, and they were kind enough to put senior in front of product specialist, which is very flattering. But you know what I mean? It's like, I could, you know, senior product specialist, you know, advising the product manager. Like, they don't want me messing with that. They've decided on that title. That's it. And you'd be surprised. A lot of people look at the software for things as simple as that. They're like, people are messing with job titles. They're putting in funny stuff.
We've had
a client complain. We just want to put a stop to it. You know,
that's interesting. And then the other side of that is too, like the normal user out there, because I'm convinced that the word user starts with a silent L. But basically, like the standard user out there in the market would probably like have that set up in that way. So they'd send an email and think, oh, there's no signature. Whoops, I've got to put a signature in here. They'll probably put a signature in manually, but then all of a sudden there'll be two signatures instead of one.
Well, the way that people cover it is they'll kind of, number one, they'll give them almost like an induction pack where it's kind of like, okay, this is going to be how the signature looks on new messages. This is how it looks on replies. Maybe this is the version on internal emails, etc. And remember, they're able to see it on the back and forth. So in a conversation, when someone replies back to them, when they look down that email trail, they can see the signature on there. So it's not like they never see it. But
awesome.
I guess a big thing is, and we're talking about, you know, users and how interested they are. A part of the value of this is almost taking them out of the loop. Because I would definitely be in the category of, I don't care. Like, oh, you're giving me these instructions to make my own signature? Yeah, I've got better things to do, you know?
Yep. Okay. Excellent. All right, I better hand it back over to Rob, because otherwise I might get in trouble.
Mark get in trouble? Never. Obviously, you spend a lot of time working with signatures and obviously making that happen in Exchange Online.
Mm-hmm.
In your experience, you know, what makes a good signature? What information should be in there? What's a good amount of information? Obviously, we've seen signatures with too little. We've seen signatures that basically have War and Peace after them and, you know, jumping around graphics. I mean, in your experience, what's sort of a best practice of what makes a good email signature?
Well, I'd put it into two things. Number one, if you use a table, like a little HTML table, that's going to hold everything in place. A lot of times I see people who they have a signature design and they're like, how come it looks like this before I send it? And then when it arrives, it's all jumbled up. often that's because they've, you know, tried to break things out with like a ton of like, you know, blank spaces or tabbed things out, and it just doesn't work in most email clients. So a table to hold everything exactly where it should be is ideal. The other thing is, in terms of what to include, a lot of SMBs are really big into social media. It can be free advertising if you get it right. And if you think about it, every single, you know, business interaction you have, you'll email them at some point. If you can put a little social media plug in there, you know, follow us on Twitter, join with us on Facebook or whatever, you're basically getting that free promotion that you're taking those people who are already active on email and kind of pushing your social media stuff on them. So it's really just those two things. Get a table to make it kind of look right, get the shape right, and get social media on there.
Okay, so How long would it take, you know, an average person to set up Exclaimer? So let's say that they've decided they want signatures in their company emails, and they've got the product. How long does it take them to set this all up so that everybody has a consistent signature when it's sent outside the organization?
So if someone books me in for a session to help someone set up Exclaimer Cloud, which you don't need to do, like it's very straightforward, but talking about booking out like the maximum time it could take, I book out like an hour. So from a technical perspective, it shouldn't take more than an hour. We're talking like half an hour. And then on top of that, doing the design, that may take a little longer, but that's just because internally, everyone's got an opinion. You know, you've got some marketing director who's like, I don't like the shape of that. And, you know, the HR person who's like, well, you need these contact details on there. And Exclaimer can help with that as well. We offer a design service. So really like an hour for the technical side, I'd say like a working day for the design side, depending on how you want to do it.
Okay. So one of the things that maybe you've got some insight into, we've obviously moved from a largely on-prem world a number of years ago into probably a largely online world now, especially for the SMB. Do you have some insight into the adoption rate that's happened? Obviously, you know, you've got the signatures that work in both, but can you give some indication as to what you see in the market as the trend towards moving the email stuff into the online world rather than staying on-prem?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I work for a vendor, so I know there might be like a sample bias, but, you know, I want to say like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was every other conversation was on-prem, 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 you know, and now everyone I speak to, almost everyone, is either in the cloud or they have plans to move to at least being a hybrid setup with some things in the cloud in the near future. So it really, I think there was someone at Microsoft recently who said that, you know, so many businesses and many businesses will never fully move everything up to the cloud, but really the future is everybody having some things up in Office 365 or Azure or whatever service they want to use. So, and I have to admit that really reflects our experience at Exclaimer as well.
Okay, and like I said, in the background here, we've obviously got this transition. We've got people getting the benefits of the cloud, but can you give us some indication on your side, technically what's happening in the background here when we've set up Exclaimer and the user fills in an email, pushes send, and it's tagging the signature that they've set up onto the email and sending out. What's actually happening? What's Exclaimer actually sort of doing in the background to actually make
good
this
question
sort of thing happen?
Yeah, totally. So so taking, for example, Exchange Online, our Exchange Online product, it's actually an Azure application hosted by Microsoft. We have it in a number of data centers around the world, including an Australian data center. And really, Office 365 is going to take that email from the client. It's going to pass it to an Exclaimer signature service where we stamp a signature on, and then we'll pass it back to 365 for 365 to actually do the hard part of sending it out. So we technically, we never talk to the public internet. You know, we're only talking to Exchange Online effectively, which gives us really a lot of benefits. You know, we don't actually have to deliver the email. We're just, you know, talking to 365, helps us a lot with security and compliance because it's all nestled within the Microsoft cloud. It's all really going on in the same infrastructure that's already handling your email.
Okay. All right. Well, I know that you mentioned the big Azure word, so maybe Mark's got some questions for you on that.
I do. I got a few questions. Now, that's interesting. So how, like, it's because I think, yeah, because Exchange Online is hosted in Azure, isn't it? Yes. So basically, that's basically where the security benefit is. It doesn't sort of get out of that Microsoft cloud
exactly
area.
Exactly.
Is it? So just I'm going back a bit here because I said I used to manage Exchange servers for a living. It goes back like a couple of years ago. But is it the forwarding or what do you call it? The routing groups or something set up? You set up a what is it called? A mail based or custom forward? For email, when they send it, it goes out and then comes back in again.
Yeah, it's two connectors, and one connector passes it exactly to the Azure service, and then another connector just takes it back. So that it's kind connector. Of a, it's a,
that's the word
exactly.
Yep.
So that,
okay.
It's kind of a, it's a closed loop, if you will. And then we also, oh, go on, sorry.
Well, no, go on, because I've got another question, but keep going.
So what I was going to say is, we get the contact details for the signature from Office 365. So in a signature design, you're just going to put in a field like display name or job title or how custom you know attribute.
I was going to ask that question.
Well, this is my first rodeo.
See my piece of paper here. I've actually written down the words "pulling info from AD." I'm thinking
this was my next question. All scripted? No. I think it's just the logical next step. People are like, okay, well, how does this actually stamp something on there? And then it's like, what is it stamping on there? Is it just stamping on some nonsense? Do I have to fill in the contact details one by one? No, we're taking them from the Azure AD.
So Azure AD is where it comes mm-hmm. from. And on premise, obviously, it comes from AD, not AAD.
Exactly.
Yeah, it comes from the directory. Yeah, cool. That makes sense. So basically, like all that the company needs to do is update their Active Directory with the correct fields, totally. So the correct phone number fields and things like that, the display name. It then gets synced up with AD Connect up to Azure AD. And then Exclaimer will pull that information out and stamp it in the right areas. Now, with the formatting, with the phone numbers, ask this question a lot. When sure. you're writing an international phone number, what's the correct way of writing an international phone number?
I don't actually think I get this question that much, but really, you just want plus and then the numbers. I know that in the US, it's going to be like 01, and then the international numbers to actually dial out in the UK, it's like 00, and then the international numbers. Best way to do it is just do +61 for Australia or +1 for the US and Canada. If you just do the plus symbol, that's perfect. And most sort of products and programs will recognize that as the beginning of a number.
Yeah, because a plus, you're right, it's the exit code for any country to get out. And two, some people have, I've noticed after that plus, like 61, they've got the first digit in brackets. And I personally don't really like that because you don't really need that. It's to show that you can use that 0 if you want in brackets, but it's there, but you don't need to use it. It's sort of confusing. But normally in Australia, we just cross off the first number of the first number of the telephone number. So if it's a mobile number, we wipe out off the 0. So it'll be +61 and the mobile number without the first digit. Is pretty much how it goes. But yeah, that's what I thought. I think there's actually a standard for that somewhere online. Now, the other question I have for you is give us a I don't know if you've spoken about this before, but give us a rundown of all your different products in relation to this Exclaimer signature service.
Yes, we do signatures, but we actually do a lot of other things that I appreciate might not be everyone's cup of tea, but they have a place for us. We got things like autoresponder, which is, it's kind of going above and beyond just, a standard out of office auto reply. It might be a way to automatically trigger a reply email when someone emails into like a sales inbox or a support ticketing help desk. It'll trigger like an automated email that goes out, maybe automatically attaches some content on there. It could even auto forward things. You could even use it to do things like change a sender address to use maybe a different domain or change it to a different sender address entirely. You could do things like, well, if the sender is a member of the tech support group and the email is going externally, maybe you want to use the support@ email address instead of their actual personal email address, if you will. So,
what a great idea.
We do all kinds of stuff. There's also, we have a product. I know it sounds similar, but there's Email Alias Manager. So instead of having to have a separate mailbox for each SMTP address you want to use, what we can do is, just your email alias is an exchange. You could choose to send as an alias. So you could use an alias as a from address, not just receiving email on it, if you will. Little things like that. We want to be kind of the market leaders in signature management and everything related to that. So sometimes that does include sender address stuff.
Yeah, because you can't really do that in Exchange, can you? You can actually change the account that you're going to send from, because you can have multiple mailboxes in Exchange. Mm. And one mailbox can have multiple SMTP addresses stamped on it to receive on. But if you're sending out, you've got to actually go in the back end of Exchange and say, all right, this is my default email address set up on this mailbox. Out of, you could have probably 20 email addresses.
Oh, yeah.
And this one is my default. But you can't, the user can't do it on the fly. And so your product enables that then.
Yes. And let's say you've got, you know, these 20 different email addresses you have email coming into, you know, you don't want 20 mailboxes to look at. You know, you don't want to go through and go, gosh, did this go to bradshepherd@exclaimer.com or was it .com.au? Was it .co.nz? You know what I mean? Like, it's, I want to just look at one mailbox, see everything. So that's really what that sort of thing is getting at, you know?
Okay. I'm going to hand back over to Rob. Rob, have you got any other questions?
Yeah. So as we get towards winding up this episode, I suppose the next question a lot of people have, I mean, the functions, the features, what you're providing, it seems great. How do you charge for your service? Is it like the Office 365 or it's a per user per month? What's the, how do we go about actually paying for the product?
I think, I think the commercial guys, I think what they try to do is follow along what Microsoft do. So for our Office 365 product, it's really, it's priced like 365. You know, it's per user, per month, or per year. You know, it really is that subscription model. On-prem, it's that one-off license purchase. And then there's the optional support renewal. But that's kind of the idea. I think that they want to, the idea is for this to be like a kind of a neat little add-on to 365. You know, you've gotten the Big Mac, this would be the fries or the milkshake, if you will, to use a really tired metaphor, but you get me.
Cool, all right. And what's the future hold for your products and Exclaimer? What do you see that is potentially going to be added to the product, or where's the product sort of going now that we're seeing more and more people adopt the online, Exchange Online? What sort of features, functionality, or additions do you think we're going to see coming from your products?
Well, I think that really what we want to do is just put out features. You know, we want, in terms of controlling signatures, changing the design, assigning different designs to people, you know, it's things like, let's say, okay, we talked about it filling in those contact details automatically. What if you want a staff photo in there? You want each kind of employee's little photo portrait in a signature. We're adding that. What if you have a signature and, you know, it's the right kind of design, but it includes a promotion that is, I don't know, it's your kind of summer sale. You don't want it all year. You want it to start on the day that sale starts, and you want it to stop displaying on the day that sale ends. So setting like a date range, we're adding that. So it's really trying to make it a lot easier to use and a lot more kind of getting more value out of it, if you will, you know?
It's interesting, excuse me, it's interesting because you look at it and you think, oh, you know, plain Jane, boring old signatures. But when you do dive into it, you look at that tag down the bottom, you look at the publicity, you look at the link to the social media, it is quite a powerful way to obviously get a message across and get people interested in your business. And it's, one of the things I took away was that the way that Hotmail actually became such a force in the market was they had a little tagline down the bottom of their emails that they put onto everyone that used their free email service, said, if you want a Hotmail address, click here to sign up. And that's how they grew their numbers. So it's much more powerful than people give it credence for, I believe.
Oh, totally. I think the thing is, our head of marketing made this comparison a long time ago. He was like, people will, you know, spend all this time thinking about business cards and, you know, oh, is this shade of blue right? Do I want this kind of font? And yet they might give out like a handful of business cards a year, but they're sending like, you know, 40, 50, 100 emails every single day. And they don't think that hard about the email signatures or even about, you know, their whole company's email signatures. So that's the thing is, this is really like, you know, your kind of your modern day business card. And there's a ton of things you can do with it, I guess would be the kind of the theory, if you will.
It's a very good way of looking at it. And again, this day and age, like I said, you're sending out millions of emails versus maybe hundreds of business cards a year. So again, that makes a very big difference in what you should focus on. So Yeah, very interesting. Something for people to think about. So with all that said, with all that information, we do need to look at wrapping this up shortly. So how can people go and find more information about your product, what it does, sign up to a trial, do all that sort of stuff? What's the best place for that to happen?
Yeah, I would really just go to exclaimer.com. It'll automatically redirect you to the regional site, and on there you'll find really whatever you need. You know, if you're exchange on-prem, direct you in the right direction. If you're exchange online, it'll handle you. So really just exclaimer.com, like disclaimer, but starts with EX.
Easy. Exclaimer. All right. Well, is what I'll do is let's hand over to Mark and with any last minute questions and then get him to round up this episode.
God, pressure's on, last minute. All right, here we go. I'm just thinking, like, while you're discussing email signature designs versus business cards, like, what color blue should this be? And the signature goes out to all these people and stuff. It's a pretty powerful thing. I'm just thinking another business opportunity for somebody to make some money on the side is Fiverr.com. You could be an email signature designer. Do you know, are you aware of Fiverr.com?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I mean, that could be ideal. Like if someone on Fiverr was like,
if they know
HTML, like they're kind of, they know what they're doing in terms of web design, you know, they're a bit technical, it could be perfect. Yeah.
And then they can sort of market it, say, we can design your signature for exclaimer.com.
Mm. Oh, totally.
Also, with all this, and I love the product, by the way. I'm thinking, like, next time we talk to you, do you think you might have a Microsoft.com email address?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think you'd have to talk to the owners. They'd love to hear it, yeah. But we'll see.
Have they... I'm sure Microsoft's probably thinking about the whole... that sort of aspect.
Well,
it fits in quite nicely with their products.
You know what? If they were, I don't think I would know at this stage, and I wouldn't be able to say either. But yeah, you know, like it's.
If I was a betting man,
popular little thing.
All the ducks are lined up.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe next year.
All right. Well, good luck with that. And look, thanks for coming on.
No,
and,
thank you.
I think, Rob, you got no further questions, or do you have anything else?
No, I'm good. I think that we take the opportunity to thank Brad for his time. Lots of good information there. Please go in and have a look at that. Sign up to the product. Get it working in your business. I think it does provide a very professional way to send out emails. It's much easier for a lot of businesses to configure centrally. So lots of great information there. Mark's happy because he had some questions and answers around Azure. So, and being an old Exchange guy, he got those as well. So we're seeing his advantage as well.
Yeah. Love the product. So
cool.
exclaimer.com is the website. And as Brad said, it'll redirect you to the local region that you're in.
Excellent. All right. Again, we thank you very much, Brad, for your time. We also thank all our listeners.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.